welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike.
You got a good poem this week. It's going to help us sort out some of these new medications for diabetes. The world in diabetes, particularly type 2 diabetes treatment, has changed a wee bit, and these drugs are often heavily promoted. The question is, as you've taught us, when we focus on meaningful patient-oriented outcomes, do they have any benefit? Most type 2 diabetes treatments focus on increasing insulin availability, either through direct-acting insulin administration or perhaps through agents that promote insulin secretion. Others improve sensitivity to insulin. Others delay the delivery and absorption of carbohydrates from the GI tract or perhaps increase glucose excretion. The so-called sodium glucose cotransporter 2s, SGLT2, reduce blood glucose by increasing urinary glucose excretion. I think this is a pretty cool approach. You're going to be peeing out the glucose. These SGLT2 drugs work in the proximal tubules where it mediates reabsorption of about 90% of the filtered glucose. While the SGLT2 inhibitors promote the renal excretion of glucose, this unfortunately only moderately lowers elevated blood glucose. These drugs have the advantage of they do not typically cause hypoglycemia, but they do help with some weight loss. Another newish class of drugs are the glucagon-like peptides. They're called the GLP-1s. These exert their main effects by stimulating glucose-dependent insulin release from the pancreatic islet cells. They've been shown to slow gastric emptying, to inhibit inappropriate post-meal glucagon release, and can actually reduce food intake by decreasing appetite. The average A1C reduction is about 1%. Well, Mark, you found an article published in BMJ that looks at both of these drugs and their effect on overall health from a patient perspective. They attempt to answer the question, do the SGLT2 inhibitors or the GLP-1 receptor agonists reduce patient-oriented outcomes in patients who have type 2 diabetes? Mark, what's the take home here?
Well, you know, you said the SGLT2s, we're going to call them flozins. I think that's a lot easier to say. And the GLP-1s are the ones that end with tide, you know, exenatide and things like that. And I think the GLP-1s were developed from the Gila monster. I think something in the saliva of the Gila monster is some sort of remember hearing that story about 10 years ago. But yeah, these drugs are becoming ubiquitous. We really need to know what is their impact on important health outcomes, patient-oriented outcomes. So this was in the BMJ, and it was accompanied by a calculator. So I'm going to give the title or the actual access point twice, BMJ 2021, volume 372, page M4573. I'll give that again later. So these researchers looked all the usual places to find RCTs that compared the flozins or GLP-1 agonists with some other approach. Two researchers independently screened the studies, extracted the data, did everything right, assessed the study quality. They did what we call a network meta-analysis. So they did direct comparisons, but also indirect comparisons across studies. They identified a total of 764 trials with over 400,000 patients. And because they had so many studies and so many patients, they could also look at the results based on the patient's baseline cardiovascular risk. So that's important because if someone is at high risk, they have more potential to gain. So for example, if a drug reduces risk by 10%, then that goes from 40 to 36% in a super high-risk person. It goes from 4 to 3.6% in a low-risk person. Those are very big absolute differences, different number needed to treat. So the quality of the studies was generally high. There was also good homogeneity for most of the outcomes. So what did they find? They found that both drug classes, the flozins and the tides, lowered all-cause mortality, cardiovascular mortality, non-fatal MI, and kidney failure. the Flozins SGLT2 inhibitors were more effective for reducing hospital admission, while the GLP-1 agonists, the TIDES, were more likely to reduce non-fatal stroke. The absolute benefit, like I said, varied based on underlying cardiac risk. So if you look at high-risk persons, they benefit more. So for example, if you take low-risk people, they had 2 to 5 fewer deaths per 1,000 people over 5 years. That number was about 10 times as high, so about 20 to 50 fewer deaths per 1,000 people for 5 years in the highest risk group. They actually provide a calculator that lets you estimate the benefit for various risk levels. And so I thought that was a really cool addition. BMJ is doing that a lot now. They're adding interactive calculators to help us apply their research. So that's at BMJ 2021, volume 372, M4573. So bottom line, SGLT2 inhibitors, the Flozins, and the GLP-1 agonists that ended TIDE decrease cardiovascular and renal outcomes to a greater extent than placebo or other treatments. They should be considered in addition to metformin and perhaps another glucose-lowering treatment for most patients with type 2 diabetes, and especially those at high cardiovascular risk.
Your last statement there, perhaps, Mark, I can ask you to clarify it. So that I think what you're suggesting is that to lower glucose, you're suggesting we use metformin, and I think you said perhaps another drug, and that these drugs be added as a third drug for their cardioprotective effect. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I think these can be, well, I think it depends on how well you are able to lower the blood sugar with the metformin. I think we're increasingly, let me put it this way, we're increasingly seeing evidence that these drug classes have a greater cardiovascular and mortality benefit than other classes, perhaps greater than the glipizides that we've used in the past. And so, you know, I think we're increasingly seeing that the argument can be made that you maybe start with metformin, but then if you're going to add a second drug, to add one of these because of those additional benefits that we're seeing and the really consistently well-documented benefits. Now, of course, they're expensive. You could look at a low-risk person, someone with a low cardiovascular risk, and 2 fewer deaths per 1,000 patients over 5 years. That's an NNT of 500 for 5 years. And the cost of preventing those 2 deaths would be very, very high. I can't do it in my head, but it's in the millions of dollars. On the other hand, if you have a high-risk patient, you can make a much clearer cost-effectiveness kind of argument. Now, those are policy decisions. You have a patient sitting in front of you. You decide what's best for that patient, right? If you're thinking about resources, it is probably more cost-effective in those higher-risk patients.
While we do what's best for the patient, sometimes the reality is that even though the evidence that you're citing would suggest that we use a Flozin or a Tide, if you will, if the insurance isn't going to cover it and they're not going to take it and they need a second drug, it may be better even then to give them, you know, a glipizide or something else.
Absolutely. None of my patients have insurance, so it's a constant struggle to try to get funding and getting them on drug company programs for these medications. And so many of them are diabetic. We have a large Hispanic and African-American population that I care for. And, you know, very, very, I mean, I think probably a majority of my patients have type 2 diabetes, if I had to guess. Yeah. And so that's a real challenge.
Thanks, Mark. A very interesting paper. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.